scanner survey was correct, Captain. There it is. Pure tritanium.
Fantastic. 20 times as hard as diamond.
21.4 times as hard, to be exact.
Precisely, Mr. Smith. Scotty, you can mark this vein as confirmed. Inform Starfleet I recommend that they dispatch a survey vessel immediately.
Acknowledged, Captain. They'll send a vessel fast enough for this richer find.
We won't be able to break it, Captain. I'll phaser off a specimen.
Behind Spock, a white vapor stealing towards them over a rock shrinks back and vanishes.
Leslie.
One of the three security guards hands Kirk a pair of tongs, and the captain picks up the fragment of tritanium.
Do you smell that?
Kirk sniffs the air.
A sweet odor like honey.
His eyes widen.
It was years ago, on another planet. A thing with an odor like that.
We're in the growing season in this hemisphere of this planet, Captain. There are doubtless many pollen aromas.
Rizzo.
Yes, sir.
Take your men. Make a swing around our perimeter. Scan for dichoronium in the atmosphere. Set your phasers on disruptor B. If you see any gaseous cloud, fire immediately. You're on red alert. Make a swing.
Rizzo sets off with the two other red-shirted guards.
Ready to beam back aboard, Captain?
Negative, Scotty. We're checking something out.
The USS Yorktown is expecting a rendezvous with us in less than 8 hours, Captain. It doesn't give us much time.
Acknowledged. Continue standing by, Kirk.
Captain, dichoronium exists only in laboratory experiments.
It's gone. I could have been wrong. The last time I caught an odor like that was 11 years ago.
In a clearing, Rizzo's team pause while he takes a tricorder reading.
Seemed to read dichoronium for a minute, and then I lost it.
He moves a few paces ahead of the other two, who remain alert, phasers drawn.
It's almost like something out there knows I'm scanning it. It's kind of keeps changing itself into something different.
Behind the two guards, the white vapor seeps over the top of a rocky outcrop. Rizzo moves a little further ahead.
That isn't possible. Nothing can do that.
The vapor attacks the two guards. They fall to the ground, clutching their throats. Rizzo turns and raises his phaser, but hesitates.
Captain.
Kirk here.
Captain.
There's strange clouds, Rizzo.
Cloud. Cloud.
Fire into it immediately.
Kirk and Spock race towards him. In the clearing, they find three bodies on the ground.
One.
Dead.
And you'll find every red corpuscle gone from their body.
The men's faces are an unnatural bluish white. Spock scans the bodies and kneels beside the sandy-haired section leader.
Rizzo's alive. Barely.
Kirk Enterprise. Scotty, lock in on us. Medical emergency.
You think you know what it was, Captain?
Something that can't possibly exist. But it does.
There's something very close to fear in Kirk's eyes as he looks down at the two dead crewmen.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. We'll be right back. Obsession, written by Art Wallace, directed by Ralph Senensky.
Captain's log, stardate 3619.2. With the mysterious death of two crewmen, all personnel on the planet have been evacuated back to the ship.
Autopsy report, Doctor.
How's Ensign Ritsu?
Still unconscious, sir.
Transfusions?
Continuing as rapidly as possible. His blood count is still 60% less than normal.
Kirk to bridge.
Spock here. Ready to leave orbit, Captain.
Hold your position.
Cutting in, if I may, Captain. The USS Yorktown is expecting a rendezvous with us in less than 7 hours.
Then you'll inform them that we might be a little late.
Jim, the Yorktown ship surgeon will want to know how late. Those vaccines he's transferring to us are highly perishable.
Spock again, Captain. Those medical supplies are badly needed on planet Theta 7. They are expecting us to get them there on time.
Gentlemen, we are remaining in orbit until I find out more about those deaths on my responsibility. I'm perfectly aware that it might cost lives on Theta 7. Kirk out. Autopsy report.
You saw their color. There wasn't a red corpuscle left in their bodies.
Marks, cuts, incisions of any kind?
Not a one. What happened is medically impossible.
I suggest you look at the record tapes of past similar occurrences. You'll find the USS Farragut lists casualties 11 years ago from exactly the same impossible causes.
McCoy stands, giving Kirk a hard stare.
Thank you, Captain. I'll check those tapes immediately.
First, can you bring Ensign Ritsu to consciousness for a moment?
Yes, but it...
Will it hurt him if you do so?
In his present condition, I don't think it would make much difference.
Then do so.
McCoy looks at Kirk curiously before leading him into the sick bay, where the platinum-haired nurse Chapel is attending to Ritsu.
Transfusion completed, sir. His pulse and respiration are still far below normal.
Give me one cc of cortisone, nurse.
Yes, sir.
Reluctantly, she puts a hyperspray to Ritzo's neck. The ensign's eyes flutter. Kirk leans close to him.
Ritsu, this is the captain. Can you hear me? Do you remember what happened to you?
Remember? Cold. I'm so cold.
You were attacked by something. When that happened, did you notice an odor of any kind? Ritsu, do you remember? A sickly sweet odor. Did you smell it?
Yes. Yes. A smell. A strange smell. It was like being smothered in honey.
Did you feel a presence, an intelligence?
It was trying to draw strength from us. I felt it. It was there.
He's beginning to sleep again, Jim. I can't risk another shot.
He's already told me what I wanted to know.
Well, I wouldn't depend too much on what he says in that half-conscious state. He could be dreaming, saying what he thought he wanted you to hear.
You check those record tapes. I want your medical analysis as quickly as possible.
He leaves.
Well, what's with the captain? I've never seen him like that before.
I intend to find out. I'll be in the medical record library.
Oh, Captain. Subspace message from Starfleet. They're
inquiring. Not now, Lieutenant. Have the security duty officer report to mail the bridge immediately.
Aye, sir.
Spock.
Continuing scanning, Captain. Still no readings of life forms on the planet's surface.
Let's assume that it's something so completely different that our sensors would not identify it as a life form.
You mentioned dichronium, Captain.
Suppose it was composed of that rare element. Strange, gaseous creature.
I have scanned for that element, Captain. There is no trace of dichronium on the planet's surface or in the atmosphere.
Suppose it camouflaged itself. Let's assume that it's intelligent, that it knows that we're looking for it.
To hide from a sensor scan it would have to be able to change its molecular structure, like gold changing itself to lead, or wood changing itself to ivory.
You've just suggested something that never occurred to me. It may provide some answers to a tape record, which I think you'll find Dr. McCoy is looking at this very moment.
Chekhov, take over on scanner.
The tall, youthful duty security officer steps out of the lift, nodding to Spock as they pass each other. He steps up confidently to the captain, who's deep in thought.
Ensign Garavik reporting, sir.
Kirk turns.
Are you the new security officer?
Yes, sir.
Was your father?
Yes, sir, he was, but I don't expect any special treatment on that account.
Kirk looks distracted.
You'll get none aboard this ship, mister.
Yes, sir.
Captain, I have a report on Ensign Rizzo. He's dead, sir.
Kirk looks back at Garavik, whose face is as grave as his own.
You knew Rizzo?
Yes, sir, we were good friends.
Graduated the academy together. You'll get a crack at what killed him. Interested?
Yes, I am, sir.
I want four men armed with Phaser 2 set for a disruptor effect. Join me in the transporter room in 5 minutes. You'll accompany me to the planet's surface.
Yes, sir.
Kirk turns away, his eyes dark and preoccupied. On the planet's surface, Garavik takes a scan with his tricorder.
Reading is changing, sir.
Kirk is also taking scans. Four armed guards accompany them.
Spock was right. Notice the molecular shift?
Dichoronium reading now, sir. Bearing 94, mark 7, angle of elevation 6 degrees, holding steady.
Over that rise. Take two men, circle around to the left. I'll take the other two and go the other way. That creature is dangerous. If you see it, fire full phasers.
Yes, sir.
The blue-eyed ensign leads his two men away.
Benson, Bardoli. Come with me.
Kirk takes more readings as he sets off in the opposite direction. Garavik and his two men pick their way through a landscape of sand and boulders dotted with clumps of yellowed grass and spindly blue trees. The vapor cloud seeps out from behind a boulder. Garavik turns and sees it. He hesitates a second, then fires at it.
A phaser, come on!
Kirk and his men race towards the sand.
Garavik, did you?
Kirk stops. Paralyzed with shock, the young ensign stands, gazing over at the bodies of his two companions. Cautiously, Kirk approaches them. Their faces are pale and bloodless. Kirk, his eyes full of pity and horror, brings his phaser to his lips in an uncharacteristically anxious gesture.
Captain's log, stardate 3619.6. One of the men in critical condition. The other is dead. And I am now even more convinced that this is not only an intelligent creature, but the same which decimated the crew of the USS Farragut 11 years ago in another part of the galaxy. Both Spock and McCoy are doubtful of this, and I sense they also doubt my decision to stay and fight the thing. Why am I keeping the ship here?
Captain Garavik, we've studied your report. Mr. Spock, will you begin?
What was the size of the thing you saw, Ensign?
I'd say it measured from 10 to 60 cubic meters, sir. It varied in size, fluctuated as it moved.
Composition?
It was like a gaseous cloud. Parts of it I could see through, other parts were more dense.
Ensign, did you sense any intelligence in this gaseous cloud?
Did I what, sir?
Did you get any subconscious impressions that this was a creature, a living, thinking thing, rather than just a strange cloud of chemical elements?
No, sir.
But you didn't come into actual contact with it, did you?
No, sir, I was furthest away from it. It seemed to come out of nowhere, hovered for a moment, then moved toward my men. It was fast, incredibly fast.
Did you say it hovered?
Yes, sir.
You did fire at it, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I did.
What distance were you from the creature?
About 20 yards, sir.
You fired at a large, hovering target at that distance and missed?
Yes, well, I didn't fire while I was hovering, sir.
You mean you froze?
No. Sir, I didn't exactly freeze.
Well, what exactly were you doing?
Well, I was startled. For a second. And then, by the time I fired, the thing was already moving.
Kirk's piercing eyes released their hold on Garavik.
Do you have any further information?
No, sir.
You don't have any further questions?
Spock says nothing. McCoy shakes his head.
I only hesitated for a moment, sir. I'm sorry.
Ensign, you're relieved of all duties and confined to quarters until further notice.
Yes, sir.
Garavik leaves the briefing room.
You were a little hard on the boy, Jeff.
He froze. One man was killed. Another may die.
Captain, scientifically...
You'll both be filing reports. Make your comments and recommendations then.
McCoy and Spock exchange a glance as Kirk leaves. Garavik comes into his quarters, throws himself face down onto his bed and rolls onto his back, covering his face with his arm. His shoulders heave. Kirk steps out of the turbolift onto the bridge.
Captain, while we wait, I've taken the liberty of cleaning the radioactive disposal vent on number 2 impulse engine, but we'll be ready to leave orbit in under half an hour.
Not leaving orbit, Mr. Scott. Not that quickly.
Captain, yeah. Your count requesting information on how soon we expect to rendezvous with him.
Thank you.
The medicine for Theta 7 colony is not only needed desperately, it has a limited stability.
I'm aware of the situation, Engineer, and I'm getting a little tired of my senior officers conspiring against me.
Everyone on the bridge stares. Kirk turns back to Scotty.
Forgive me. Perhaps I shouldn't have used the word conspire.
Agreed, sir.
Scanner readings.
Nothing, sir. Continuing to scan.
Are you aware that it can change its molecular structure?
Yes, sir.
Are you scanning for any unusual movement?
Yes, sir.
Any type of gaseous cloud?
We've run a full scanner probe twice.
Well, then run it 20 times if that's what it takes.
He storms out. Spock comes through McCoy's office into a lab full of medical equipment.
I hope I'm not disturbing you, Doctor.
Interrupting another autopsy report is no disturbance, Mr. Spock. It's a relief.
I need your advice.
Then I need a drink.
I do not understand your reasoning.
You need advice from me? You must be kidding.
I do not joke, Doctor. Perhaps I should rephrase my statement. I require an opinion. There are many aspects of human irrationality I do not yet comprehend. Obsession, for one. The persistent, single-minded fixation on one idea.
Jim and his creature.
Precisely. Have you studied the incident involving the USS Farragut?
No, with all these deaths and injuries, I've only had a chance to scan the tapes. There are 8 or 10 hours of record tapes there.
Fortunately, I read somewhat faster. In brief, Doctor, nearly half the crew and the captain were annihilated. The captain's name was Garavik.
Same as our ensign?
His father. Among the survivors was a young officer on his first deep space assignment, James T. Kirk. And there is still more. I suggest you study this.
He hands McCoy a small square data file. Kirk lies on his bed in his quarters, staring at the ceiling.
Personal log, stardate 3620.7. Have I the right to jeopardize my crew, my ship, for a feeling I can't even put into words? No man achieves Starfleet command without relying on intuition. But have I made a rational decision? Am I letting the horrors of the past distort my judgment of the present?
McCoy comes in and leans against the doorway through to Kirk's sleeping quarters.
Mind if I come in?
Kirk glances at him, then turns his eyes back to the ceiling for a moment before abruptly springing up from his bed and pushing past McCoy to the communication screen on his desk to his bed.
Kirk to bridge. Scanner report.
Continuing scanning, sir. No unusual readings.
Maintain search, Kirk out. It can't have just vanished.
Sometimes they do, if we're lucky. Monsters come in many forms. You know the greatest monster in them all, Jim? Guilt.
Get to the point.
Jim, when a young officer is exposed to unknown dangers for the first time, he's under tremendous emotional stress. Now, we all know that.
Ensign Garavik is a ship command decision. You're straying out of your field, Doctor.
Am I? I was speaking of Lieutenant James T. Kirk of the starship Farragut. 11 years ago, you were the young officer at a phaser station when something attacked. According to the tapes, this young Lieutenant Kirk insisted upon blaming himself.
Because I delayed in firing it.
You had a normal emotion. You were startled. You delayed firing for a grand total of perhaps 2 seconds.
If I hadn't delayed, it would have been killed.
Well, the ship's exec didn't seem to think so. His log entry was quite clear on the subject. Lieutenant Kirk is a fine young officer who performed with uncommon bravery.
Don't you understand? It killed 200 crewmen.
Captain Garavik was very important to you, wasn't he, Jim?
Yes. He's my commanding officer from the day I left the academy. One of the finest men I ever knew.
Kirk stands up angrily.
Killed that thing if I had fired soon enough the first time.
You don't know that, Jim. You don't know that any more than you know that Garavik could have destroyed it.
I can't help how I feel. There's an intelligence about it, Bones. A malevolence. It's evil. It must be destroyed.
To be so obsessed.
Obsessed?
That you could destroy yourself, your career. A young boy who reminds you of yourself 11 years ago.
Don't push our friendship past the point where I have to take a
fish. I'm not, Jim.
McCoy's eyes are icy.
This is professional, Captain. I am preparing a medical log entry on my estimation of the physical and emotional condition of a starship captain.
Kirk pulls back, his eyes startled. McCoy goes to the door.
Which requires a witness of command grade.
Spock comes into the room. Kirk comes somberly through from his sleeping quarters, his brown eyes bewildered.
Do I take it, Doctor? Commander? That both of you, or either of you, consider me unfit or incapacitated?
Correctly phrased, Captain, as recommended in the manual. Our reply, also as recommended, is, sir, we have noted in your recent behavior certain items which on the surface seem unusual. We respectfully ask permission to inquire further and...
Blessed, forget the manual.
He sits at his desk.
Ask your questions.
Sir, the USS Yorktown is waiting now at the rendezvous point. It carries perishable
forget
drugs.
Forget the recitation, Spock, and all the facts.
They need those vaccines on Theta 7, Captain. Now, why are we delaying here?
Because I'm convinced that this is the same creature that attacked the Farragut 11 years ago.
Creature, Captain?
My report is on the tapes. As it attacked us 11 years ago, as I lost consciousness, I could feel the intelligence of the thing. I could sense it thinking, planning.
You say you could sense its intelligence, Captain. How? Did it communicate with you?
You state that it happened just as you lost consciousness. Now, the semi-conscious mind is a very tricky thing. A man never knows just how much is real or how much is imagination.
Whatever it is, Doctor, whatever it is, wouldn't you call it deadly?
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
And what if it is the same creature that attacked 11 years ago from a planet over 1,000 light years from here?
Obviously, Captain, if it is an intelligent creature, if it is the same one, if it therefore is capable of space travel, it could pose a grave threat to inhabited planets.
A lot of ifs, I agree. But in my command judgment, they outweigh other factors. Intuition, however illogical, Mr. Spock,
is recognized as a command prerogative.
Jim, we're not trying to gang up on you.
And you haven't, Doctor. You've expressed the proper concern. You've asked the proper questions. You've both done your duty. Now, may I ask what medical log entry you intend to make?
At this point, my medical log remains open.
In that case, gentlemen.
Bridge to Captain. Come in.
Kirk here.
I have a reading on the whatever it is, Captain. Leaving the planet's surface, heading into space.
All decks, red alert. Red alert. Prepare to leave orbit.
Kirk is in the command chair as the Enterprise hurtles through space. Scotty comes up anxiously.
Captain, we can't maintain warp 8 speed much longer. Pressures are approaching the critical point.
Range, Mr. Chekhov.
0.04 light years ahead. Our phasers won't reach it, sir.
We are barely closing on it, Captain. We could be pursuing it for days.
If necessary. Do what you can to increase our speed, Scott.
Scotty turns away with a dour expression. Kirk chews his bottom lip.
Extreme magnification, Mr. Taylor.
Magnification 12. There, sir. There. Got it.
Kirk takes a startled breath. On the screen ahead of them is a pulsing white cloud.
Spock. How do you read that?
Conflicting data, Captain. It seems to be in a borderline state between matter and energy, elements of both. It could possibly use gravitational fields for propulsion.
And you don't find that sophisticated, Mr. Spock?
Extremely efficient, Captain. Whether that indicates intelligence is another matter.
Open hatch and impulse engine number 2. Mr. Scott was doing an AID cleanup on it.
We won't be using the impulse engines. Turn the alarm off.
Aye, sir.
Scotty looks round from his instruments.
Captain, we can't do it. If we keep this speed, we'll blow up any minute now.
Chekhov and the helmsman turn round and look at the command chair. Kirk looks at Scotty, then at Spock. Spock returns his gaze inscrutably. Kirk's lip trembles with bitter disappointment.
Go to warp 6.
Scotty sighs with relief. Chekhov and the helmsman exchange a glance, and even Spock closes his eyes for a second. In his quarters, Ensign Garavik lies on his bed, gazing at the ceiling. Nurse Chapel breezes in with a tray.
Hi. Everyone else is at alert station, so I brought you some dinner.
Not hungry.
Doctor's orders.
What's happening?
She covers the tray.
Are we still chasing that thing halfway across the galaxy? Yes. Has the captain lost his sense of balance? Maybe. Is the entire crew about ready to explode positively? You're lucky you're out of it.
What do you mean, out of it? I caused it. You know that too, don't you? If I'd fired my phaser quickly enough on Arcus 10, this wouldn't have happened.
You know, self-pity is a terrible first course. Why don't you try the soup instead?
I told you, Christine, I'm not hungry.
Dr. McCoy thought you might say something like that.
A disc.
This is his officially logged prescription for you. It has one word on it, eat. Now, if you don't follow his orders, Dr. McCoy could, and possibly would, have you hauled down to sick bay and fed intravenously.
She turns on her heel. Nurse Chapel puts the data disk she waved at Garavik back on McCoy's desk.
What's that?
This?
She hands it to him.
A survey on simian respiratory diseases. I thought you took Garavik some food. What were you doing with this?
Applying psychology.
She smiles and leaves. McCoy looks at the tape with a puzzled scowl. On the bridge, the white cloud seems closer.
The creature is slowing. It's down to warp 2.
Reduce speed.
Kirk comes to stand beside Chekhov.
Approach slowly.
I don't understand. It was outrunning us.
Maybe it's decided to fight.
Phasers ready?
Phasers show ready, sir.
In his quarters, Garavik looks at the food and hurls the plate cover across the room. It hits the ventilation control, knocking the filter switch from active to bypass. He throws himself back on the bed in despair.
Battle stations, all decks to battle stations. This is not a drill. All decks to battle stations.
Garavik rushes out.
Forward scanner to bridge.
It's coming to a full halt, sir. Magnification one.
The cloud hovers in front of the view screen.
Move in closely, Mr. Chekhov. Sublight 1/4 speed.
Garavik steps urgently onto the bridge.
Captain, request permission to return to my post. Within phaser range, sir.
Lock all phasers on target.
Locked on target.
Fire phasers, Mr. Chekhov.
Ineffectual, sir.
Photon torpedoes. Minimum spread pattern.
Minimum pattern ready, sir.
Fire photon torpedoes.
The ship rocks violently.
There. It's coming, sir.
Deflectors up.
Deflectors up, sir.
The deflectors will not stop it, Captain.
That's impossible.
I should have surmised this. For the creature to be able to use gravity as a propulsive force, it would have to have this capacity.
5 seconds to contact.
Enter ruler.
All hatches remain secure, all lights on the board show green.
Sir,
the number two impulse vent. We have the red light on it.
The cloud fills the view screen.
Captain, something's entered through the number two impulse vent.
Negative pressure in all ships' vents. Alert all decks.
Kirk meets Spock, McCoy, and Scotty in the briefing room.
Report.
When it entered impulse engine number two's vent, it attacked two crewmen, then got into the ventilating system, and now we have air for only 2 hours.
Bones. One man has a chance for survival. The other is dead. You can add that little price tag to your monster, huh?
That's enough, Bones.
It's not enough. You didn't care what happened as long as you could hang your trophy on the wall. Well, it's not on it, Captain. It's in it.
Gentlemen. May I suggest we no longer belabor the question of whether or not we should have gone after the creature. The matter has been rendered academic. The creature is now after us.
Creature, Mr. Spock.
It turned and attacked, Doctor. Its method was well considered and intelligent.
Kirk raises an eyebrow.
Yes. Well, it could have been many light years away from us. Instead, it chose to turn and attack here.
Why? Impossible to tell, Captain, until I can make a closer survey of the creature.
Scotty, try flushing the radioactive waste into the ventilation system. See what effect that has.
Aye.
He hurries away. McCoy comes up to Kirk.
I'm sorry, Jim. I was wrong.
He goes. McCoy smiles.
Captain, the creature's ability to throw itself out of time sync makes it possible for it to be elsewhere. In the instant the phaser hits, there is therefore no basis for your self-recrimination. If you had fired on time and on target 11 years ago, it would have made no more difference than it did an hour ago. Captain Garavik would still be dead. The fault was not yours, Jim. In fact, there was no fault.
If you want to play analyst, Spock, use someone else, not me. My concern is with the ship and the crew.
Spock's slanting Vulcan eyebrows knit even more deeply as he watches his captain leave.
Come in.
Spock enters Garavik's quarters. The ensign goes to stand. Spock motions him to stay seated.
Ensign, am I correct in my assumption that you've been disturbed by what you consider to be a failure on your part?
Garavik nods bitterly, not looking up at Spock.
I would like you to consider that the hesitation for which you are blaming yourself is an hereditary trait of your species. When suddenly faced by the unknown or imminent danger, a human will invariably experience a split second of indecision. He hesitates. Do I have your attention, Ensign?
Yes, sir.
I know you would prefer to wallow in a pool of emotion rather than...
Mr. Spock, it's very kind of you to come here.
Kindness, Mr. Garavik, is another human emotion. And I believe we have enough of that. I simply would like you to accept the fact that your reaction has its basis in a physiological... You smell something.
Sir, it's coming through the vent.
I'll attempt to sleep it off.
Spock hurls Garavik out of the door, goes to the vent and tries to shut it off. The switch breaks in his fingers. He puts both hands over the vent, but the vapor pours through, enveloping him in a white mist.
Sir, the creature's in my cabin. He's got Mr. Spock.
On my way, Garavik.
Security, 341, medical alert. He's got it. Reverse cabin pressure, 341.
Scotty punches some buttons. In Garavik's cabin, the creature is sucked back into the vent. McCoy and a guard hurry towards Garavik, standing by his cabin door.
Security, hold it. Tricorder.
Jim, Spock may be dying.
If we let that thing into the ship, you'll have a lot of company.
I must have jammed the vent control when I hit it.
See if the reverse pressure has pulled it back into the ventilation system.
You saved my life, Captain. I should be lying dead in there, not him.
Fortunately, neither of us is dead, Ensign. The reverse pressure worked. The vent is closed.
Don't misunderstand my next question. Mr. Spock, why aren't you dead?
It's that green blood of his.
My hemoglobin is based on copper, not iron.
I'll bet he left a bad taste in the creature's mouth, too.
Colloquially expressed, but essentially correct.
Yes. Yeah. Scent is different. I think I understand something now.
Do you believe you're in communication with the creature, Captain?
I don't know what it is, Mr. Spock. But you remember, I said the thing was alive. It may not be communication as we understand it, but I did know it was alive and intelligent. And I think I know something else now.
Engineering to Captain Kirk. Engineering to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here.
Scott, Captain. The creature's moving back toward the number 2 impulse vent. The radioactive flushing may be affecting it.
Open the vent. On my way to the bridge, Kirk out.
Spock goes ahead of him.
Ensign Garavik.
Yes, sir.
The young ensign comes and stands in front of his captain.
You were on the bridge when we were attacked.
Yes, I'm sorry, sir. I know I was confined to quarters, but when the alert
very
sounded...
Very commendable, Ensign. What was your impression of the battle?
I don't understand, sir.
I'm asking for your military appraisal of the techniques used against the creature.
Ineffective, Captain. I realize, Captain, you did everything you could do. I know that. It's just that nothing works against a monster that can do the things that thing does.
Kirk nods.
And, Ensign, what is your appraisal of your conduct on the planet?
I delayed firing.
And if you hadn't delayed firing? No difference, Ensign. No weapon known would have made any difference. Then, or 11 years ago.
Kirk's face clears. He takes a breath and looks up at Garavik.
Report for duty, Ensign.
Yes, Captain.
Thank you, sir.
Kirk and Spock step onto the bridge.
Report, Mr. Checker.
Results positive, Captain. The creature has left the ship at high warp speed and is already nearly out of scanner range. The way that thing can move, Captain. I wouldn't believe it.
Direction, Mr. Spock.
It was bearing 127 Mark 9, but I've lost it now.
Mr. Scott, I'll need all the speed you can deliver. Keep at it until we begin to shake apart. Kirk out.
I believe I know where it's going.
It has changed course before to mislead us, Captain. Logic would dictate that...
No. I'm playing intuition. Mr. Chekhov, compute course for Tycho Star System.
Computed and on the board, sir.
Ahead full.
Ahead full, sir.
Lieutenant Uhura, contact Starfleet and the USS Yorktown.
Frequency open and clear, sir.
Inform them that we are pursuing the creature to planet 4 of that system.
That's the location of its attack on the USS Farragut 11 years ago.
I do not understand, Captain.
In Garavik's quarters, I said the scent of the creature was somehow different. Something in my mind said home.
And do you know where home is, Captain?
Yes, I think I do. I don't know how I know, but home is where it fought a starship once before.
Spock raises an eyebrow.
Give them our tactical situation, inform them that I'm committing this vessel to the destruction of the creature. We will rendezvous round trip time, Mr. Chekhov.
1.7 days, sir.
We will rendezvous with the USS Yorktown in 48 hours.
Later, with the Enterprise in orbit around a wrecked planet, Kirk meets with McCoy, Spock, and Garavik on the bridge.
I assume that you now believe we should pursue the creature and destroy it.
Precisely. You don't agree with Mr. Spock?
It's the time factor that bothers me. Those drugs are perishable.
Doctor, evidence indicates the creature is here to spawn. If so, it will reproduce by fission, not just into two parts, but thousands.
Antimatter seems our only possibility.
An ounce should be sufficient. We can drain it from the ship's engines, transport it to the planet's surface in a magnetic vacuum field.
Contact medical stores. I want as much hemoplasma as they can spare in the transporter room in 15 minutes.
Yes, sir.
I presume you intend to use the hemoplasm to attract the creature.
We must get it to the antimatter. It seems attracted to red blood cells. What better bait could we have?
There is still one problem, Captain.
The blast, yes.
Exactly. A matter-antimatter blast will rip away half the planet's atmosphere. If our vessel is in orbit and encounters those shock waves...
A chance we'll have to take, Mr. Spock.
Also, we cannot be certain the transporter will operate under those conditions. If a man is beaming up when that hits, we may lose him.
That's exactly why I've decided to set the trap myself.
Captain, there is so little hemoglobin in my green blood. The creature could not harm me extensively. It therefore seems logical for me to be the one...
Negative, Mr. Spock. In case this plan fails, I'll need you aboard the ship. In that event, we'll need another plan.
It will require two men to transport the antimatter unit.
I'd like permission to go with you, sir.
I had you in mind, Mr. Garavik.
Kirk and Garavik beam down with a large flask of red hemoplasm and carrying a blue antimatter sphere in an antigrav unit.
Kirk Enterprise.
Spock here, Captain.
Proceed immediately to maximum orbit.
Acknowledged.
The Enterprise heads out to a higher orbit. Kirk and Garavik carry the antigrav between them.
Just think, Captain. Less than 1 ounce of antimatter here. It's more powerful than 10,000 cobalt bombs.
Let's hope it's as powerful as man will ever get.
They let go of the antigrav. It hovers a few inches off the ground.
Detonator.
Yes, sir.
Garavik passes Kirk a small red device about the size of a hand communicator. He sets a control and fixes it to the side of the antigrav.
Kirk Enterprise.
Spock here, Captain. Holding at 30,000 kilometers.
Antimatter container position and arm. I'll call you back when it's baited. Kirk out.
Captain, look.
The vapor cloud appears a few meters away, hovering over the large glass storage container of hemoplasm. It descends on the flask. The liquid inside rapidly drains of color, turning transparent.
The hemoplasm. The bait's already taken.
We'll have to use something else for bait.
Sir, that thing only feeds on blood.
The vapor rises from the flask.
Garavik, get back to the ship. Tell them to prepare to detonate.
Captain, you're not going to be the bait.
So get back to the ship. Ensign, I give you an order.
Yes, sir.
Garavik karate chops Kirk on the neck. He collapses, and Garavik drags him to his feet. But Kirk recovers and fights Garavik off.
Consider yourself a report. This is no time for heroics. I have no intention of sacrificing myself. At least not yet.
He takes out his communicator.
Spock. Spock.
Spock here.
Scan us. And lock onto us. It's going to be close. Very, very close. Stand by.
The vapor cloud approaches.
Stand by, Enterprise.
It gets closer to Kirk, Garavik, and the antimatter container.
You can smell it, Captain. sickly. Honey, sweet.
It's only meters away.
Stand by, Enterprise.
The cloud glitters and envelops the anti-grav.
Now, energize and detonate.
In the transporter room, Kirk and Garavik start to materialize. But the matter stream fades.
Reset.
Scotty recalibrates.
Energize.
All decks stand by. Shockwaves.
The ship is shaken by shockwaves from the explosion on the planet's surface. McCoy looks at Spock and Scotty anxiously.
Do something.
We are, Doctor. Cross-circuiting to A.
As McCoy stares at the chamber, two glittering matter streams appear.
Got them. A piece of them anyway.
Cross-circuiting to B.
Crazy way to travel, spreading a man's molecules all over the universe.
Garavik and Kirk materialize. They step off the pads. Garavik shakes his hands as if they're tingling.
Captain, thank heaven.
Mr. Scott, there was no deity involved. It was my cross-circuiting to be that recovered them.
Well then, thank pitchforks and pointed ears. As long as it worked, Jim.
That's a fair statement, Bones. Now that the creature is dead, let's save some lives. We'll deliver your medicine. Bridge, this is Kirk.
Well, we're here.
Have Mr. Chekhov lay in a course for rendezvous with the Yorktown. Maximum warp.
Aye, sir.
Oh, Ensign, meet me in my quarters when you've cleaned up. I'd like to talk to you about your father. Several tall stories I think you'd like to hear.
Thank you, sir. I would.
Kirk smiles, and they leave the transporter room together. The others follow. This audio description was written and produced at IMS. For the Sci-Fi Channel.